I'm pulling out of my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for the drive to work. Okay, so today is part two in the series I'm calling Getting the Band Together, which is me through a series of podcasts documenting the stories of every card that I had a major hand in that got banned or restricted. And so anyway, last time we left off in August of 1999 when Yagma's Bargain got banned. So today we're picking up in September of 1999. The following three cards got banned or restricted in extended and vintage. So banned and extended, restricted and vintage. So the cards, let me go through them one at a time, and I will explain each of them as I get to them. So we'll start with Frantic Search. Frantic Search costs two and a blue. It is, I think, instant, isn't it? I think it's an instant. It's draw two cards, discard two cards, but then you untap up to three lands. So this is what we call a free spell, meaning that it untaps lands equal to the mana value of the spell. So it should cost you, you should have to tap three lands to cast it, but then it untaps three lands. So let's talk a little bit about free spells and how they came to be. So to do this, we have to go back to Ice Age. So Ice Age introduced something we call cantrips. And the idea is some of, like when you pay for a card, you're paying two costs. One cost you're paying is you're paying mana. The second cost is you're spending a card. And that card has utility. The card actually means something. If you ever learn about card advantage, like the card itself has value. And when you cast a card, you're giving up the card, much like you discarding a card. And so the idea of a cantrip was, what if the casting of a card didn't cost a card? Now, originally in Ice Age, you would get the card at the beginning of the next turn. But we eventually realized we didn't need to do it. There's like one card that mattered for an Ice Age. And it didn't matter here. So we started doing cantrip, just draw a card. And the idea is that we get a cost a little bit more. Usually you cost about two more to draw a card. And drawing a card is worth about two mana, roughly. And so the idea is that we would do cantrips. So Bill Rose, I believe, at some point decided that, you know, that if we wanted to excite people about things, we needed to sort of not do them for a while to build up excitement and do them. So one of those things he thought was multicolor cards. That is why, for a couple years, the two sets leading up to Invasion, Urza's Saga and Mercadian Mask, had no gold cards in them. But another one he thought was cantrips. That if we want to make cantrips exciting, we need to save up for cantrips. I argued with him at the time. I did not win this argument. I believe cantripping is a cost. Like, we shouldn't deny ourselves costs. Costs are important. But anyway, for Urza Saga, we were not allowed to do any cantrips. So I was trying to think of, could we do something? Like, I was just, how do we replace cantrips? So remember, like I said, a card has two values. The value is mana and a card. Well, I can't give you back the card. What if I could give you back the mana? That was the idea behind free spell. So the, Frantic Search is, I have to have three mana to be able to cast it. But if I have three mana, essentially it's free because I get to untap the land that I use to cast it. That was the idea. So free spells proved to be pretty broken. And the major reason is that they actually could net you mana. Not just pay back mana, not just be free, but gain you mana. Probably we're talking Urza Saga here. So the biggest was Tolarian Academy. So Tolarian Academy, by the way, I think I talked about this last time, where I don't count Tolarian Academy as one of the cards that I had a major hand in. I did change it from tapping for colorless to tapping for a color, because I convinced the rest of the development team that having a color cycle of lands made it a little more, made it cooler. And they agreed, and so we did that. But anyway, Tolarian Academy lets you tap for a lot of blue mana. And so when you got to untap a land, and one of those lands could be Tolarian Academy, you could net huge amounts of mana. So the idea is free spells not only didn't cost you mana, sort of, they netted you mana. So if I had three mana, one of which is a Tolarian Academy, or I just have a Tolarian Academy, let's say, but imagine I have three mana, one of which is a Tolarian Academy. I get to untap three lands. So I get two mana from my two other lands, and then I get some number of mana from my Tolarian Academy. Three, four, five, six. So it allows me to net a lot of mana. So it's very good. And it's also a searching card, so like it it was very, very good in combo decks because it helped go find the cards you needed to find that you needed. So Frantic Search was broken. Tinker. So Tinker costs 2 and a blue. It's a sorcery. When you cast it, you have to sack an artifact you have on the battlefield. And then you get to go through your deck, find an artifact, any artifact, put it on the battlefield, I believe untapped, and then shuffle your library. So this card came about because there was a card in Antiquities. Antiquities, my favorite expansion up until coming to Wizards. Had an artifact, Transmute Artifact, it was called. And the way it worked is you had to sacrifice an artifact, and then you go got an artifact out of your deck, except you paid the difference in mana. So if I sacked a 1 mana value artifact and got a 6 mana, I'd have to pay 5. I think it costs 1 blue mana, I believe is what it costs. So anyway, I was just trying to make a fixed version of it. I liked a lot what the card did. It was fun to tutor for things. But the idea of, you know, having to pay the differential, that's a lot of words. I'm like, well, I'll just charge you more. So I'll charge you 2 more, but then not charge you for the differential. Well, Transmute Artifact, never been banned, never been restricted. Tinker, so we had a conversation one time in the pit where the conversation was, what is the most broken card Marcus ever designed? And the pit came to the conclusion that Tinker was the most broken, and Tinker is mighty broken. There are many things you can cast for 0 that are artifacts, some of which even produce mana. And that means when you get to 3 mana, you can turn that 0-cost artifact into crazy things. We make big, powerful artifacts. Like one of the most powerful is Blightsteel Colossus. I think it is a 12-12 with infect, either 11-11 or 12-12 infect. The point is, if it hits you, you die and lose the game. You can get things that can win really, really fast. So Tinker, also a mistake. Next is Crop Rotation. So Crop Rotation is a sorcery. Oh, no, sorry, it's an instant. Tinker was a sorcery. Crop Rotation is an instant. It costs 1 green mana. It allows you to sack a land, then go into your deck, get any land you want, put it in play untapped. So it turns a land into another land. Although, not just a basic land, any land. So not just color fixes you, it lets you get pretty powerful lands. In fact, Frantic Search and Tinker and Crop Rotation all were quite good with Talarian Academy. Obviously, Frantic Search let me untap it and get more mana out of it. Crop Rotation let me go get it out of my deck. And I believe this is the point where only one person could have a legendary permanent in play, the same legendary permanent in play. So if you got your Talarian Academy out before your opponent got their Talarian Academy out, that was usually game over, because now you prevented them from having a Talarian Academy unless they destroyed your Talarian Academy. A lot of games came down to who could get theirs out first. That's why Crop Rotation was so important. And then, I guess Tinker, it's more that Talarian Academy allowed you to be able to cast Tinker and the kind of deck that Talarian Academy wanted, which was a deck full of artifacts, played really well with the strategy of Tinker, which wanted a deck full of artifacts. So all these 3 cards really played well. They got banned because they were all really useful in the same kind of mono blue slash artifact deck that was quite powerful. Okay, now we jump forward to June of 2000. The following was banned in Mask Block. Rashadin Port. It's a land tapped for colorless, and you can spend 1 and tap it to tap a land. What was going on here? So, I said earlier that Bill had sort of put this dictum out that we weren't going to do multicolor in Urza Saga or in Mercadian Mass. So, Free Spells was me trying to adjust in Urza Saga, causing problems. Well, Rashadin Port was me causing problems in Mercadian Mass. So the idea was, since there were no multicolor cards, we felt we could use some of the space that we might use for dual lands. Let me take a drink. We would use the space that we would use for dual lands for what I'll call colorless lands. That meant lands that tap for colorless. And when you tap for colorless, you get a little utility, because that's weaker than tapping for a color. And so we made 5 cards. I think I made most of these cards. five cards that just, the idea is I tap for a color and then I do something, what was supposed to be a little bit innocuous. One of them, another one I made that ended up causing problem was called Dust Bowl. There was a card called Strip Mine that was made in, where was Strip Mine made? Antiquities. That was quite problematic. It was a land that you could tap and sack to destroy a land. I then tried to make a fixed version of Intempest called Wasteland that, while weaker than Strip Mine, was still pretty powerful. It destroyed a non-basic land. So it didn't destroy basic lands, but still really good. Dust Bowl was my next attempt at it. I finally got a Ghost Quarter, I think was the solution of the one I like, where you destroy one of their lands, but they get replaced with a basic land from their deck. So it does allow you to deal with problematic lands, but it doesn't make them go down on mana. So anyway, I did finally solve that one. Anyway, the other ones, I just thought what I was doing were tiny effects. I really didn't think I was doing anything. And Rashad and Port, it turns out, messing with the opponent's mana is quite powerful. And I don't think I really respected how powerful it was. And it's a good example of why you just want, like, this is this card was made during Mercating Masks. And that is just the beginning, or I guess, no, before we got them. We realized from Urza Saga that we really needed sort of better developers. People who were really, really good at power level. A lot of the people, like the first wave of, the second wave of R&D that I got hired in, which was me and Bill Rose and Mike Elliott and William Jockish. William was the only one of the four of us that was, even had some developmental aspects. And really, we then hired Henry, who had come from the Pro Tour, and we started hiring people off the Pro Tour. Randy and Mike Drenay and Mike Turian and Matt Place and Brian Schneider. And we just started hiring people who, like, they were good at breaking things and understanding what the good things were. And but anyway, it's a good example of not quite having those people around. I made a card that seemed innocuous enough to us that we really didn't test it. And once people started playing with it, it was obvious it was good. We just didn't recognize that. So that is Rashad and Port. Okay, next we get to March of 2001. These cards were banned and extended. First is Replenish. 3 and a white sorcery. Return all enchantments to the battlefield. There have been some cards before this. All Hallows Eve, Living Death, that returned all the creatures in your graveyard to the battlefield. Although some of them did other things. And I think we had done something that returned all the land from the battlefield. Anyway, I just said we were making... So Urza Saga, although it was not so obvious after the fact, had an enchantment theme to it. And so we were playing around with enchantments. So I was just trying to make a useful thing for enchantments that I hadn't seen us do with enchantments before. And the idea was, okay, well, let's just get enchantments back from the discard pile. I think when I made it, I thought it was more of this novel thing. And I definitely, by the way, when I used to, back in the day, back when I was a developer, I mean, I guess I'm a designer at this point, but I still did development. I would play in the FFL, the Future League. And I actually made, when Urza's Destiny was in the Future League, I made a mono white deck with Yawgmoth Bargains in it. And the idea was I discarded the bargains in other ways, and then I used Replenish. Replenish was the way I got them into play. I didn't even have black mana in my deck. I remember Yawgmoth Bargain I talked about last time was like, what did it cost? It was a lot of black mana. It was expensive. What was your card? It's 4 black. So 6 mana. So the idea was I would get it into my graveyard and then Replenish to get it, like, probably way before I could even cast it out of my hand. The Replenish was pretty fun. I knew Replenish was powerful even back then. But it turned out to be even more powerful than I thought. The funny thing is, when I turned over Replenish, because Urza's Destiny, I was the design team. We were kind of pinched on design. So I did all the design myself. And I believe I turned Replenish over at 3 and a white. Now, given I was the design team, it wasn't my job to properly cost things, but I gave my... And it didn't change. I used to joke that if I realized they wouldn't change it, maybe I should have cost it higher. but anyway, that's Replenish. Survival of the Fittest is 1 and a green. It's an enchantment. For 1 green mana, you can discard a creature card in your hand, and you can go get a creature card out of your library and put it in your hand. So turn any creature card in your hand to any creature card in your deck. It's another engine card. I like... So the idea is you turn a creature card into another creature card, but ideally you're turning less valuable creature card into more valuable creature card. There was a card, what was it called? It was Mirage, where you could sack a creature to go get a larger creature from your deck and put it into play. And I really liked that concept, and I was just kind of tweaking it. And I was like, what? Instead of turning a small creature in play into a bigger creature in play, I turned a small creature in hand into a bigger creature in hand. And my thought process at the time is you still have to cast it, right? You know, it goes to your hand, so I'm not putting it to play. But what I missed is one of the things about Magic is late in the game, sometimes I draw dead cards, right? And one of the ways I draw dead cards is I draw creatures that would be valued to me early in the game, but aren't valuable late in the game. Oh, look, it's turn 8 and I draw a Land of War Elf. I don't need a Land of War Elf. I have all the mana I need. You know what I really need rather than Land of War Elf? A better creature. And so it turned sort of suboptimal creatures into optimal creatures. It's like instead of my Land of War Elf, I get to go get the absolute best creature for me at that time. And in general, I think one of the things you can see a through line here is just not having enough respect for the power of tutoring. Tutoring is very, very powerful. Going to get the exact thing you need when you need it is infinitely powerful. And as you will see as we continue through, a lot of the cards I'm making that get ban restricted, in fact, do tutor. Okay, now we're going to jump ahead to October of 2002. The following card was banned in Commander, Test of Endurance. 2WW enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, you win the game if you have 50 or more life. So let's go back. This story begins in Antiquities. That's a lot of stories begin. I really like Antiquities had a big impact on me. There's a card in Antiquities called Millstone. So a Millstone was a card, cost 2, I believe, and 2 in tap. You put the top 2 cards of the opponent's library into the discard, or target player, I think, but you mill target player, 2 cards from target player, mill 2. So you put the cards from the top of the library into the graveyard. And so there was when Richard Garfield made Magic, he understood that, you know, the game was normally going to end because you did damage to the opponent. But what happens if you get a stalemate? How does the game end? And so Richard came up with a backup that said, when you can't draw, you lose the game. So the idea is somebody at some point is going to deck themselves, and then, well, then they'll lose. That was kind of the backup, like to make sure the game ends. Like you draw a card every turn, so eventually it's going to draw their last card. The East Coast Play Tufters in Antiquities, their design team, made a card called Millstone. And the idea of Millstone is, oh, I can put this in my deck as a means to mill out my opponent. Like, I could, if I just sort of control the environment and I mill them, rather than just having to wait for them to mill out, I could speed it along. I was so enamored with that card. I loved milling. I thought milling was so cool. And then in Legends, Vinex said, there was 2 cards that introduced poison counters. Now I could win the game by giving my opponent 10 poison counters. And I became enamored with alternate win conditions. So much so, I made the Cheese Stands Alone and Unglued. I made, what's it called? There's the first ever 5-color sorcery that you win the game if you have one of every color in play. I'm blanking the name on that. I think that was in. Anyway, the point is, I really, really enjoyed all win conditions. So when I was working on Odyssey, I came up with a master plan. Instead of having one win condition, what if we had a cycle of win conditions? But because I didn't think the set should have that many win conditions in them, I said, what if we stretch them across the block? And so, I can't remember all these. So Battle of Wits and Chance Encounter, the blue and red one. Battle of Wits is if you have a big enough library, which ended up being the real powerful card that people played. Chance Encounter is about flipping coins. Then there was Mortal Kombat, which was about creature cards in Graveyard. That was in Torment. And then in Judgment, there was, what was the green one called? Epic Struggle, which was about having a certain number of creatures in play. And then this one was Test of Endurance. Notice all of them have a synonym for like a challenge. And Test of Endurance, we thought life was cool. Now, to be fair, we picked 50 life because you started at 20 life. And okay, doubling your life and then 10 more seemed like a real challenge. That was something to work. Because you start with 40 life, in Commander. And because the early games is a little less rigorous, you know, people sort of build up, getting 10 life really just wasn't that much of a challenge. Nowhere near as much of a challenge as getting 30 life. And once again, two-player games are a little faster than Commander games. So it just, the card was broken only because it was designed for one thing, and then when it was played in a different format with different structures, yeah, it was just imbalanced. I don't think Test of Endurance is problematic in two-player. I don't think it's ever been banned in any two-player format. But anyway, it's just me trying to do alt-win conditions. Okay, March 2003, this card was banned in Extended and restricted in Vintage. Entomb, this is from Odyssey. So Odyssey was a graveyard set. So I decided to make a graveyard tutor. So Entomb, it costs a single black mana, it's an instant. You search your library for a card and just put it in your graveyard. That's it, just put it in your graveyard. How good, it's not in your hand, it's not on the battlefield. How much problem can this cause? That's what I thought. So the idea was, I was a very Johnny deck builder before I came to Wizards. And I loved making reanimation decks. At the time, Animate Dead was the one from Alpha that I used. But there were other ones that came along. And the idea is I somehow get a really big creature in my graveyard, and then I animate it. And then either I attack it, or in some weird cases, I'd give it to you. But the idea is I get something that would way, way sooner than I should. If I can somehow discard a card or somehow get a big creature card into my graveyard, and then animate it. And so I liked the idea of just making easier good stuff. Like, one of the things I tend to do, especially early on at Wizards, is just think of decks that I made that I enjoyed and go, could I do that a little bit easier? And so the idea was, I just want to get stuff in my graveyard. How much damage could that do? Well, it turns out on turn one, if you put your giant creature into the graveyard, and on turn two, with Animate Dead, you take it out of the graveyard, you can get things on turn two that you shouldn't get. But anyway, Entomb, I mean, one of the lessons of today is tutoring is very powerful. And even tutoring to a zone that you think, like, oh, what does it matter? Like, I can't even cast it. Well, if you're putting it in your graveyard, there's something you're doing with it. And we make cards that interact with stuff, like reanimation. And there's other ways, too. There's also cards that have effects in graveyard. Anyway, it turned out to be better than I thought. Okay, that gets us to May of 2003. The following five cards are banned in Commander. Golden Wish, Cunning Wish, Death Wish, Burning Wish, Living Wish. As I said, the theme of today is how tutors can be broken. So the wishes, so what happened is a judgment, so Odyssey Block was about the graveyard, but we did this little thing where in Torment, the second set in the set, we had more black cards than any other color and less white and green cards. So to balance it out, in Judgment, we had more white and green cards and less black cards. And so one of the things we did is we had brought back like Sengar Vampire in Torment. So we brought back Urnam Jin in Judgment. We thought it was fun to bring back a powerful creature of the past. It wasn't quite as powerful as people remembered it, but, you know, early Magic creatures were pretty weak. So what was powerful was subjectively different, I guess. But anyway, we brought it back. And so we were looking for a splashy rare cycle that we could tie to the Urnam Jin, because we were planning to use Urnam Jin for our marketing. And so I was really inspired by a card called Ring of Maruf that Richard Garfield had made that let you get a card from outside the game. Dun, 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 outside the game. And I thought, well, what if we tutored from outside the game? And I think when I pitched it, I in fact called them wishes, because the idea is, oh, I have a djinn. Well, the djinn grants me wishes. And the wishes let me go get the thing my deck really needs that I didn't remember to put in my deck, or I didn't, you know, that I can go get something that's not in my deck. And we chopped it up. So let's see. Golden Wish. Golden Wish is 3 white-white. It gets an artifact or enchantment from outside the game. All these go into your hand. Cunning Wish is 2 and a blue. It's gets instants. Death Wish is 1 black-black. Gets any card, but you lose half your life. Burning Wish is 1 and a red. It's gets a sorcery. And Living Wish is 1 and a green. It gets a creature or a land. So we got all the card types at the time. There's some ones that Wishes didn't get, but they just didn't exist at the time. The Planeswalker, for example, wasn't yet a creature. It wasn't yet a card type. But the idea was that you can go and get whatever you need when you need it. And this is pretty fun. In fact, I like the Wishes quite a bit. I played in a few formats. I remember I played in, there's one format where the public played Wizards. It was an online event. And I had a burning wish, and I had a list of all the sorceries I could get. And I wanted to win a game with coin flipping. I never actually had the opportunity to do it, but there's a game by which you can do damage to the opponent by flipping coins. Game of Chaos, I think. Anyway, and I wanted to go get that to win a game. It didn't end up happening. I did use the wish, but I didn't end up doing that. Anyway, the challenge here is wishing is powerful, but ironically, that's not why they got banned. the reason they got banned in Commander is there is no outside the game in Commander. There's no side. So in constructed play, we change it so when you wish, you go and get cards that are in your sideboard. Later, we let you go get cards that had been exiled, which I don't agree with, but. But there's no sideboard, there's no out of the game. So any card that lets you go get things outside the game, there is no outside the game. You can't do that in Commander. So the cards weren't banned for power reasons. They're just banned because they don't work in Commander. Okay, next up is October of 2003. Banned and extended, restricted and vintage. Gush. So Gush is from Acadian Masks. It costs 4 and a blue. And it's an instant where you draw two cards. But if you bounce two islands, meaning you put two islands from your battlefield into your hand, I mean your islands, you get a cast Gush for free. The reason this came about was we were working on Arcadian Masks, and we were trying to find some new and exciting thing to do. I thought back to the pitch cards, which were cards in Antiquities, in Alliances, Force of Will being the most famous one, where you could cast a card by discarding another card of the same color. And there was a cycle of them. And I really liked them, and I thought that alternate casting cards were really cool. So we decided to come up with 5 new alternate costs. I can't remember all of them. White, I think, was tapping creatures. Blue was bouncing islands. Black was sacking creatures. Red was sacking mountains. And green was giving the opponent life. We'll get to that one later in the series. But anyway, it turns out that being able to draw cards for no mana is quite powerful. And that is why Gush got banned. I mean, the idea behind it was pretty good. Like, the reason bouncing lands, like, well, you're setting yourself back and, you know, you are giving up mana. But the idea essentially is there are a lot of ways to offset that, like, with the cards you're drawing. And also late game, once they get established, like, losing the mana is not as powerful as is the first one or two turns. But anyway, that is what happened with Gush. Gush is quite good. Next up, in December of 2003, banned and extended, Ancient Tomb. This is from Tempest. It's a land that you tap for 2 colorless mana, and it does 2 damage to you. So, obviously, Sol Ring was in Alpha. Sol Ring costs 1 mana to cast, and then you could tap it for 2 mana. And so I was like, okay, I want to make a land that taps for 2 mana. What is the right cost for it? Obviously, and you're not paying mana because it's a land. So 0 life wasn't right. I said, what if you pay 1 life for it? That felt not too good. Then we said, well, how about 2 life? We said, oh, okay, maybe 2 life is okay. 2 life was not okay. We kind of finally figured out, it took us a little while, that lands tapping for more than 1 mana really were problematic, and we really stopped doing it. In modern day, we do, I mean, every once in a while, like, we make some cards, we have to transform it first, but without jumping through some major hoops, we do not give you lands that tap for more than 1 mana. That has just proved problematic. And that card, which seems innocent enough, look, I'm just paying life for mana, but it turns out, in some ways, like I say, it's like an engine. Turning life into mana is pretty powerful. Okay, next up is, and this is going to be the last one for today, is in 2003, Restricted in Vintage, was Chrome Mox. Chrome Mox is a 0 artifact, it has imprint. When you cast it, you have to put a card from your hand on the bottom of it, and then it taps for any colors that are in the imprinted card, the card that you exiled. Technically, you exile, when I say put it under, just to remind you, but you technically exile it. So what happened was, well, Moxes were in Alpha, obviously. There were 5 of them, 1 of each color. Mox Pearl, Mox Sapphire, Mox Jet, Mox Ruby, and Mox Emerald. Very, very powerful, part of the powerful 9. We later made one in Mirage Block, I think, Mox Diamond, where the idea is, okay, Moxes are zero-cost artifacts to produce mana. Can we make those fair? So the idea of Mox, what is this, Chrome Mox, was you had to imprint a card, meaning it costed you a card. So it wasn't just free. It costed you a card. And it cost you not just a land, because lands are colorless. It had to cost you an actual colored card. And the idea there was we thought like that would be enough of a cost. In the end, it's not quite enough of a cost. Free mana is very powerful. But it was definitely us experimenting and trying. And we have made Moxes since then that we haven't had a ban. So we're getting a little bit better at making Moxes. But Chrome Mox was our attempt at making a Mox. And, you know, Moxes are hard. They're just powerful. But anyway, guys, so we're up to, where do we end today? December 2003. So we got a ways more to go. I hope you're enjoying this series. It is interesting to look back at all the, at my many mistakes that I made. But anyway, guys, I am now at work. So we all know what it means. It means it's the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. See you all next time. Bye-bye.